Jack and Rosie, who had been elected to shadow Luke and Esther, did not have much to do in the interval between tea and supper, because the visitors were hanging around Mrs. Fosdick and her food. "We're having melon for starters," Jack heard her tell them. "You know, tickled up with kirsch and a few glassies on top." He tiptoed away, gleefully anticipating Aunt Penelope's reaction when she tasted the wine, and went back to his room. He wanted to have another thumb through the Bible, to see if he could find any more texts that stuck up for dogs. So far he had only one, though it was quite a good one, he thought, and unbeatable as long as the sainted aunt could not counter with some text against dogs. By and large, the Bible did not seem much in favor of dogs, and tended to lump them in with whoremongers and murderers, Jack found. "But you'll be all right, old chap," he told Zero. "I'll stick up for you, and I dare say even Father will, actually." The moment when Mr. Bagthorpe actually confronted the guests inexorably arrived. He had gone to the library in Isham that afternoon to be out of the way, leaving his wife to apologize for his absence. The party foregathered at around 7, drawn irresistibly by the delicious scents of Mrs. Fosdick's cooking. Because the sitting-room was already much cluttered with extra dining furniture, Mrs. Bagthorpe had wanted to dispense pre-supper drinks from a tray in Mr. Bagthorpe's study. He had reacted strongly against this suggestion. "If I ever got her vibrations in there," he had said, meaning Aunt Penelope's, "I do not think I should ever get rid of them. They would render me and the room sterile." There were, however, several comfortable chairs, the overflow from the sitting-room, placed about the hall, and there Uncle Claude and Aunt Penelope were sitting, tomato juice in hand, when Mr. Bagthorpe emerged from his study. He later asked his wife if she could arrange for Aunt Penelope not to sit in the hall, as he was sure he could feel her vibrations coming under the door. Mrs. Bagthorpe did not see how she could promise this, so he went and fetched an old rug, which he intended to place along the bottom of the door as a vibration cum draft excluder. "Ah, Henry!" exclaimed Aunt Penelope. "So there you are!" She sounded faintly accusing, as if she suspected him of having been in hiding, as, of course, he had been. "Hello there," replied Mr. Bagthorpe. "How are you both? Looking remarkably in the pink, the pair of you." This remark sounded harmless enough, but was deliberate provocation, because Aunt Penelope always maintained that she was in poor health. Her complaint was obscure, its symptoms were mysterious and sudden in their comings and goings, and it had no known medical name. "I am, as a matter of fact, not at all well, thank you," she replied now, "though I do not complain." "Good," said Mr. Bagthorpe cheerfully. "I have been frail myself latterly, but I don't complain." He went over and poured himself a stiff whiskey. Jack watched Aunt Penelope as his father did this, and was rewarded by seeing the expected dark red flush creeping up her neck. When Aunt Penelope refrained from criticizing or coming out with a reproving text, her neck invariably went red. Jack thought this phenomenon very interesting. Preliminaries over, conversation languished. "Last week, Claude and I unavoidably stayed overnight in a guest house in Worthing," Aunt Penelope remarked suddenly. "Unfortunately, it was unclean." Aunt Penelope did not use the word dirty. To her, if things were not clean, then they were unclean, as they would have been in the Old Testament. "Unclean, eh?" rejoined Mr. Bagthorpe. "Sorry to hear that. Very bad luck. While I think, give my car a washdown first thing tomorrow, will you, Jack? That's unclean." He tossed off the rest of his drink and helped himself to another. "I think we can all go in now," said Mrs. Bagthorpe swiftly, putting down her craven orange juice and rising. They went into the sitting-room and sorted themselves out round the table. This was something of a power game. No one present wished to sit next to Aunt Penelope. Rosie and Uncle Claude lost, Mr. Bagthorpe said about the wine. "Not for us, thank you, Henry," said Aunt Penelope. "Really? On that wagon? Oh, bad luck." He affected not to remember that the D.B. were unremittingly teetotal. "Ah, well, as St. Paul says in his first epistle, verse 23, drink no longer water, but use a little wine for thy stomach's sake." "Of course, if one takes anything out of context," said Aunt Penelope, very tight-lipped and thrown off balance. His own family stared at him dumbfounded. Had he made it up, they wondered? Mr. Bagthorpe almost never quoted from the Bible, and even if he did, he got it all wrong, and it never sounded like something from the Bible. This quote had sounded authentic, and if it was not real, then he had certainly worked at it. What they did not know was that Mr. Bagthorpe's journey to the library that afternoon had been partly to gain access to Cruden's complete concordance. He had spent over an hour in the reading room looking up headings like wine and word and so on. He had also later leafed at random through the Old Testament and come up with some useful material, particularly from Ezekiel and Lamentations. Before Aunt Penelope had time to cap this very reputable-sounding quote, Mrs. Fosdyke hedgehogged in with her tickled-up melon. She whipped a dish in front of everyone and darted out again. "Lovely," murmured Aunt Mrs. Bagthorpe, and picked up her spoon. "Ahem!" Aunt Penelope cleared her throat loudly. "Have we not forgotten something?" "What's that?" inquired Mr. Bagthorpe through a mouthful of melon. "Grace," she told him. "Grace, Claude!" Claude obediently shut his eyes and started in on what seemed an interminable grace, and Rosie giggled because she had forgotten about the grace aspect of the D.B. visits. Jack squinted across and saw that Aunt Penelope had her eyes shut very tightly, as if as a reproach. At last Jack was free to deal with his glacé cherries, and did so, moving them into the melon and its juice. "Stop!" commanded Aunt Penelope, and everyone jumped, and stared at her over their poised spoons. "Esther, Luke, put down your spoons!" There was a little clatter as they obeyed. "Sorry," said Mr. Bagthorpe, "was there a second verse?" "This melon," stated Aunt Penelope, "has been tampered with. Claude, your spoon!" Another clatter.
"Do you not like the melon?" asked Mrs. Bagthorpe anxiously.